సహ నో భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తమావిర్విషావహై ఓం శాంతి 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 ఓం జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శివ సరి గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే
Yamaraj continued, page 65. My dear servants, please do not approach such devotees, for they have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are equal to everyone, and their narrations are sung by the demigods and the inhabitants of Siddhaloka. Please do not even go near them. They are always protected by the club of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Lord Brahma and I, and even the time factor, are not competent to chastise them. Paramahamsas are exalted persons who have no taste for material enjoyment, and who drink the honey of the Lord's lotus feet. My dear servants, bring to me for punishment only persons who are averse to the taste of that honey, who do not associate with Paramahamsas, and who are attached to family life and worldly enjoyment, which form the path to hell. 27 and 28. Srila Prabhupada comments. After warning the Yamadutas not to approach the devotees, Yamaraj now indicates who is to be brought before him. He specifically advises the Yamadutas to bring him the materialistic persons who are attached to household life merely for sex.
Yeah. So that final point here is that the devotees, they're not under the control of the universe, right? So they're not under the time factor. They're not under any of these things. So because of that, then they're not affected. So what appears that we're affected, that's not actually the time factor. That's not karma. It's just Krishna arrangement for whatever should come to us so that we'll, you know, be more serious about Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? So the devotees are in a totally different category. You know, but just because they're in that different category and all these reactions, it doesn't mean that how you say, the position of love of God is not something to endeavor for. Because right? Otherwise one can slow the path down that it doesn't go very quickly. Right? So even though this is so special and so amazing, that's not the special part. The special part is actually the connection to Krishna.
The special part is taking advantage of the situation.
But I'm saying prema is the real special. Yeah. Getting rid of sin, not being under the control of time, not seeing Yamaraj, those aren't the big deals. In the material world, it may be a big deal, but it's actually not the big deal.
Yamaraj continued, "My dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties towards Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals." 32. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrita Mala, chapter 13, called Sanat and the Bhakti Executed Exclusively by Taking Shelter of the Holy Name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sarana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. Right? So, point is the devotees remember Krishna. They perform their duties towards Vishnu as their only duties, because that's the only duties of human life, right? Who are always chanting the holy name of the Lord. So that's them taking full shelter of the holy name. Otherwise, then those who don't, then here they have a problem. But if they've chanted once, they're in a different category, right? Yes. Make sure I get my one in. Yeah. Go on the record. I chanted once.
Yes.
What are we talking about those devotees who left the past temporarily?
Left the past and are only... Oh, left the path. I said left the past. And I was going to say, wow, we're just in the present, or they're already in the future.
So, in that gap between they're actively practicing and then, let's say, coming back.
Right.
All that gap is filled with usually materialistic approaches, which is still...
Really? So they're not just going out just to get away, so they can just get into their rounds and chanting.
Except for those.
Except for those, okay.
Yeah. So what would be their position in terms of karma and influence?
Still, there's none.
So all that suffering they're going through, it's like Krishna mentioned.
Yes. But it's according to the activities they perform, so it'll always be in connection with that. Because where you have your attachment, that's where you're going to understand the punishment. Does that make sense?
Yes. Always gives us whatever we
feel? Yes. Otherwise, if we don't notice it, then we won't take it seriously. I can think it was, not sure what it was. It was, I think, you know, it's like there was this one kid. He would go down and steal bananas. And so they'd be talked to or this or get some work or punish, but it'd still go on. Then one day the kitchen in charge says, all right, that's it, you know? And then it worked out. This kid, all he gets to eat is bananas for 3 days. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, bananas only. By the end of the 3 days, he wouldn't even look at a banana again, let alone steal it, you know? So, you know, so that's the thing. So it goes in, it's always in connection with what, you know, there's some connection to it. Yeah. It worked, you know. You wouldn't think of that. You know, I think this other punishment. No, no. Yeah. Just, okay, you like
that's
bananas. All right, then. Here we go.
But then, in the same sense, also should have been correct in his treatment of our material desires, sex life. That was his point.
As long as it worked. After I think it was after one day was not interested in bananas anymore, but by 3 days. So the point is you know, is Osho not interested?
He is. He's following it anymore.
Yes, so that means it's not, I say.
There's not the
focus? It's I say. See, if you think I'm doing it because I want to, if you have to do it because you have to. Okay, let us just take in that particular example. Now, they're wanting to be involved in these activities, and they think that they're doing something very special. Okay, how much taste for this kind of activity? Let's say someone's a professional in that field. You understand? Because they have to, therefore there's no taste. Yeah. Does that make sense? So you want to do all these things, then, you know, then one will be put into that position. It's not that it won't end up in a future birth that has some connection. You know what I'm saying? You like to hang out with people who aren't qualified, so then you take birth in an unqualified family. Right? Cause then, you know, in other words, whichever family you're in, that's the family you won't like.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry?
They're not Indians.
Indians
are like that.
They're pious.
I forgot that one.
You always have to remember that aspect. But, or it means even they like their family, as you know, maybe they would wish they were in a different social status, or, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So then it's like that. You know, if you're in a poor family, you want to be in a rich. If you're a rich family, you want to be in something else. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So Krishna arranged, then you're there. Okay, you like that so much, then here it is. Then you lose interest. So. Oh, here we go. Okay,
Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. The word Vishnu Kritiyan is very important in this verse because the purpose of human life is to please Lord Vishnu. Varnashram Dharma is also meant for that purpose, as stated in the Vishnu Purana 3.8.9. Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Para Paraf Puman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyat Tad Tosha Karanam Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 8.58. Human society is meant to follow strictly the Varnashram Dharma, which divides society into four social divisions, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four spiritual divisions, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Varnashrama Dharma easily brings one nearer to Lord Vishnu, who is the only true object in human society. Right, so, Varnashram needs to be followed because it brings you closer. Why? Because you're regulating, those regulations are always in connection with Vishnu. Right? His order, his law. So that's why it says brings you near. It doesn't sing that it brings you to. It says it brings you near. Right? So, because when you're near, then you may take more advantage. Mm-hmm. That's the important, because, you know, so either it'll be taken, no, this is the process. No, it's not. Oh, so therefore we don't need it. No, it brings you near. Okay. Then, Yamaraj, considering himself and his servants to be offenders, spoke as follows, begging pardon from the Lord. O my Lord, my servants have surely committed a great offense by arresting a Vaishnava such as Ajamiyo. O Narayana, O Supreme and Oldest Person, please forgive us. Because of our ignorance, we fail to recognize Ajamiyo as a servant of your Lordship, and thus we have certainly committed a great offense. Therefore, with folded hands, we beg your pardon. My Lord, since you are supremely merciful and always full of good qualities, please pardon us. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Srila Prabhupada comments. Lord Yamaraj took upon himself the responsibility for the offense committed by his servants. If the servant of an establishment makes a mistake, the establishment takes responsibility for it. Although Yamaraj is above offenses, his servants, practically with his permission, went to arrest Ajamiyo, which was a great offense. Right, so practically with his permission. In other words, they're supposed to collect those who are sinful. They looked at him, he's practicing a sinful life, so he should be brought. So not that he told them to bring specifically Ajamiyo, but by his order, them following his order, you know, as previously mentioned, then, you know, so therefore practically he's... The Nyaya Shastra confirms, Britya Paradhe Swamino Dandaha. If a servant makes a mistake, the master is punishable because he is responsible for the offense. Right. So that's the other side of, you know, being responsible. Right? It's not just you have the authority and that, but you also have the responsibility. So this is the part that is not popular nowadays. Right? So in other words, there's nowadays, the logic of half a duck is like the principle. That's solid management these days. So that's the difficulties. We take responsibility. That means you're responsible for who's done. Otherwise, no, I didn't say that, or no, it wasn't me, or I didn't tell him. Like, you know, it'll all be. But before it was, no, they take responsibility. But the point is this is for honest people. Right? You know, if people are dishonest, even though it's there, you can't take this attitude. Otherwise, they'll take advantage.
So that's why but the, don't see it.
Yes, yes. So, therefore, but it doesn't mean that you don't offer respects to the Lord and beg forgiveness for the offense. Right? So that part remains, because Krishna is not going to take advantage.
Okay. Every day must always check his followers.
Yes, yes. That's the point. Is it's not just they do anything and then, oh, well, I didn't know, or I wasn't there, or, you know, all these lame excuses. It's got to be, no, that happened, so therefore you're responsible.
Which means before becoming a leader, a person must check if he is able to follow.
Yes, if he can follow and he can make others follow. Because the point is being a leader
it means it's the fourth stage. Right? We take it as just leaders, the first stage. No, but it's the fourth stage. You've heard what is the position of leadership. You've contemplated it. You've practiced it. Then having realized, then now you make others like that. So how do you do that? How do you hear and practice? You do that under authority. So one who's followed authority, realized the validity, they can therefore get others to follow authority. Because if you can't get your followers to follow authority, then you're actually in no position to be one. Because that fourth stage is making others like you. So if they don't have an interest in authority, then one would doubt, does the leader have actually interest in authority?
Yes.
They don't respect, that means the leader is good chance doesn't respect. Or even if they do, they don't see so much the importance, therefore they never made the, you know, how you say, the emphasis. So then it should be, okay, then that has to be emphasized. Okay, one took it for granted that, you know, they were nice people, they're doing, it's wrong, so responsible. What are we going to do? Train them to be proper. Like that. You know, so therefore Yamaraj is instructing his students. So like that. So he's in management, something went wrong, he instructs his dependents so that they won't make the same mistake. And we haven't heard of it again. We haven't heard that this is a regular thing, that they're always coming along and, you know, the Vishnu Dutas are having to, you know, and then there's a whole powwow, you know, going down to see Yamaraj and that, and, you know, what's the big deal, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Is that, yes?
The same principle working for, like, parents to the children?
Yes. Right, yes. It means if the kid, if you're at the airport and your kid goes over and whacks the people next to you's kid, technically the parents are responsible. Why is their kid whacking people? You understand? So that's what you have to take that responsibility. You know, you have parents say, what can you do? They're kids, you know, like that. Nobody likes that. You see in the line, everybody's grumbling. One kid's yelling and screaming, they're all saying, why can't the parent control their kid? Why can't they this, that? Why are they here? Why don't they go home? You know. Good chance they're in the airport to go home, but, you know, go home by a different, catch a bus.
Walk.
Yes.
But the Guru, they have many disciples.
Yes, the point is why take unless you're going to be responsible? Right? That's the point. Don't become a mother, a father, you know, a spiritual master, presiding deity, you know, devata, unless you're going to save the dependents from death. So that's the point. Don't become the temple president if you're not going to take the responsibility for the temple. You know, if it's just, no, I just manage the place, then yes, you're the manager. Let someone else be the president. You know, the person on top has to take the responsibility. But if it's just, no, we just do the bureaucratic paperwork and all that, and that makes us the top. So, no, you're not the top. That's the guy who works for the top. Right? That's where Prabhupada said, what do you call it? President, secretary, treasurer. That was Prabhupada's system. We always make president, vice president, and that's kind of where it ends.
Temple commander.
But Prabhupada wanted that lead the temple is the president, secretary, and
the treasurer.
Because then you know what's the money going on in the temple, you know any official things that are going on. Right? Because the secretary should take care of, he takes care of all that paperwork.
Yes.
Right? The treasurer takes care of all the number work. And then the president takes care of all the people. Because those two positions, you don't deal as much with people. So it's not about training the people, but it's seeing that everything goes on, the environment's there. But the president, his business is training the people.
That's a famous story that the treasurer couldn't understand was the position of the president, because he was doing everything and the president just took care of the people.
Right.
And then the treasurer came to Prabhupada and said, this guy, he's like doing nothing. Prabhupada said, no, wait, there will be a moment, he will step in. And then there was some difficult situation and he did, and he solved everything. But right. It wasn't obvious for everybody else.
Yes.
It was like, this guy, why is he called, you know, temple president?
Yeah. Well, there's ones like I also mentioned once to, you know, the directors in Mayapur. I needed someone to do in the school management. And he says, "No, you're managing." And I says, you know. And I says, no, you need something like that. He says, you know. Then he told me, explain what you mean. What do you want him to do? So when I told him what I wanted to do, he says, no, you need it. What you want is an administrator. He says, you're doing the management. You need somebody to take care of all the, you know, the accounts, of this, of that, all that kind of thing. So, you know, he made that distinction. But nowadays, I see it's very common, someone who deals with accounts, they think that they can manage everything. They can't spend money. They can't make money. All they can do is document that there is money. But somehow or another, it's felt nowadays that you're qualified, therefore, to have an opinion on everything. And, you know, it's sad. But that was Prabhupada's arrangement like that, because the top has to be the one training the people. So that means then, if we take that, the president is the one training the people. And, you know, the temple commander sees that the schedule's going on, the treasurer, the accounts and all that are going properly, money's being spent coming in and all that, and the secretary that all the official things are taken care of, and, you know, we know that, you know, what days of codicil and stuff like that. You know, so then if that's all taken care of, then the president is taking care of training and seeing that everyone's doing and engaged and seeing everyone's according to their nature. So then if that level of management, the top one is doing that, then what does it mean when you go up to the next level, the GBC? Yeah. Right? It's not that they're poking their nose in the accounts. It's that they're seeing that the presidents are trained.
Yeah.
Like that. And if they think that there's a weakness, they can look at the accounts. But it's not that looking at the accounts is the job. Yeah. You understand? Nowadays it's professed that looking at the accounts is the job. No. Yeah. If you need, you look at the accounts, but training them in the standards of Krishna consciousness, that's the job. And then if you need to look at the accounts or other things, then you do that also. Like that. So there's a that's the difference between management and leadership. So therefore, your temple commander, secretary, treasurer, they're managing. Right? But your president, he's leading. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? So this is a very important point, because otherwise it's very, very common that it doesn't happen. I remember there was this one, I don't know if you remember, it was something in the Middle East. I don't remember where it was, what country it was in, if it was Kuwait or which one. But there was this, some time ago, is that... they went in to do some black ops mission, and they crashed. So they became found out. You know, it was found out about it. So point is black ops, you get away with it, you're a hero. You don't get away with it, then there's a problem. So now something like that doesn't happen just because the guys with the helicopters say, hey, let's go for a spin, right? You know, there's guys above them that are the authorities that tell them what to do exactly. But because it was some big, big international, big, very embarrassing thing, then the whole thing was pinned on the guy who was just directly in charge of the helicopter and the mission, not the guys who tell him what to do. I don't know. Remember this one?
Yeah.
Oliver North, that one. So then the whole point was is everybody knew it came from above, but he just said, no, they told me this, but I thought, no, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's very obvious he just took the rap just so that it would go. But the point is it starts from the top down.
Yeah.
Now, when you're dealing with politics and all that, that may be a good thing to do. But we have to remember that's political. So in the political field, it may be necessary, but it has to be understood from the higher position that actually they're responsible.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's not a methodology. It may be used as a political method. Does that make sense?
Sense.
So we're saying is that your standard, the government would take responsibility. But if it's a thing where that will create even more problem, then you pin it on someone else. But between the government and that person, then they know what the standard is. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just, you know, for the greater good. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. My dear King. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. My dear King, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is able to uproot even the reactions of the greatest sins. Therefore, the chanting of the Sankirtan movement is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Please try to understand this so that others will take it seriously. Right? So he's telling the king, now you please understand, you take it seriously, others will take it seriously. Right? Because he's the king. Because generally he's taken, no, whatever my management is, that's the greatest thing, whatever my arrangement is, that's the best. But here's, no, the Sankirtan mission, that's the best thing. That's the thing that actually makes it happen. There is nothing superior to that. So it says, you know, the greatest sins. Because otherwise we'll say, oh no, this is a sin that can't be, you know. No, the greatest sin. Does that make sense? But it doesn't mean we take advantage and commit the eighth offense. The point is we should have that faith that this is the only thing that's going to make it go away.
Is that is the potency, that it's not for our own benefit that we engage in bhakti, and that's why we use it. You're saying we shouldn't make the eighth offense of looking at it as karma punishment.
Yes.
So that is the potency.
I'm thinking maybe the seventh.
Seventh.
That you commit sin on the strength of the holy name.
No, but eighth is
the... Yeah, no, but I just said the wrong number.
Oh, like that, yeah. But still also the same point that because properly taking up this activity is the opposite of being...
Yes, you could say that. So it is. But at the same time, it's the most selfless, but it's the best thing for the self.
Yes.
That's the whole thing. When we're selfish, it's the worst thing for you. You know, so that's the point.
If you want it, you can have it.
Yes. It's yours, yeah. So that's the way it works. Because when we see it's Krishna's, now Krishna's the only one who he wants it and he can have it. And it is his.
That's why we're trying to be him.
Yes, that's a good point. That's why we, you know, can't get better than that. Can't get better than that. So that's the point is, but if we see ourselves as Krishna's, then that same facility is there. Right? And so it's for Krishna. Because the point is Krishna is doing it for himself. It works. So if we do it for Krishna, it'll work. We can't say, oh, he's doing it for himself, so if I do it for myself. No. If he's doing it for Krishna, you do it for Krishna. Just like in the morning, you meditate on Krishna. Krishna gets up in the morning, meditates on Krishna. So it works. So the whole point is you're doing what he's doing. So we're assisting him in his pastimes. But the whole point is the pastimes are all about the devotees. So that's the thing, is for himself means for his devotees, because the devotees are non-different. You know what I'm saying? So the sense of possession is so great, right? In other words, the relationship is more deep according to the sense of possession, right? So for Krishna, there's a non-difference. Right? So therefore, it's the deepest.
Right?
No, his energy. Right? So there's no difference. So therefore, his sense of possession, it is him anyway. Like that. Yeah, so therefore, if we have that sense, but it's for Krishna. So. Srila Prabhupada comments. One should not conclude that one may continue to sin with the intention of chanting Hare Krishna to neutralize the reactions. Right? In other words, you're thinking, if I do this and I, you know, but I can chant and it'll go away, that's the seventh offense. It's not that you're chanting Hare Krishna, doing your sadhana, and there's something going on that's not proper. That's not the seventh offense. That's weakness of heart. That's a satkrishna. That's, you know, something else. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Rather, one should be very careful to be free from all sins and never think of counteracting sinful activities by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, for this is another offense. That's why it says the devotee just, whatever I'm due, I'll get. I'm not trying to counteract. That's why it makes that point. The devotee's not thinking, he's thinking, I'm sinful, I deserve to you know, punishment, so, you know, let that punishment happen. Because they're very careful about this offense. If by chance a devotee accidentally performs some sinful activity, the Lord will excuse him. But one should not intentionally perform sinful acts. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So intentional means one feels it's all right, or you know, one prefers. But it's accidental means you're determined not to, but the modes of nature catch you anyway. Right? And there you are, sitting in the walk-in refrigerator, you know, eating all the ice cream. You didn't want to do it.
No.
You were just planning to walk right by, go to the temple, sit down and chant your japa. Yes. But somehow or another, as you walk by, then the ice cream was calling.
You lost control.
Yes, yes. It's like sirens, you know, sitting there and crash on the banks of the... Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Today seems to be your day. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, one who constantly hears and chants the holy name of the Lord. Oh, remember there's no clock. Can't look up and see the clock. One who constantly hears and chants the holy name of the Lord. No, the holy name. Where are we? Here. And hears and chants about his activities can very easily attain the platform of pure devotional service, which can cleanse the dirt from one's heart. So, very easily. So that's what he says. We're constantly trying to hear and chant about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Then this comes very nicely. One cannot achieve such purification merely by observing vows and performing Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Right? So it's not because I've taken a vow, I'm not eating halibut for the next month. That's not what's going to purify. Right? It's by devotional service. Making a vow, every day I'll eat halibut, but it's nothing. But if Krishna gives, then you eat. That's the point. You're determined to be engaged in Krishna's service. So it's up to Krishna how he engages you. So.
Can you choose the way you want to be engaged in Krishna's service?
I mean, whether it's plain halva or strawberry halva.
Mm-hmm. Ice cream.
Could I eat them together? They probably work very well together.
Yeah.
Point is, if it's connected to Krishna, it works. Have you ever tried halva with ice cream?
Ooh,
it's good. It's good? You know, it's just like you have cake and ice cream. Why can't you have halibut?
No.
You know, one of the things they would do that they learned in, we first heard about it in Allahabad, but then we also heard about it in Calcutta from some gentlemen. They were talking, because it was winter time, so they were talking about this one shop. You go there, they have hot gulab jamuns, because some of them, they keep them hot. They make them and keep them hot, because it's winter. And he was mentioning, I can't remember what he was saying, but I kind of think he was saying eating it with, I can't remember what it was, but it's something, either ice cream or with yogurt, like that. Because Calcutta is definitely gulab jamuns with mishri doi. Mm-hmm. But I think those ones there, because I don't think they have mishri doi, but it was something else. But it was some cold dairy product, so you have the hot thing with the other, so that's the whole thing, is the hot halibut with the cold ice cream. It's good. I have an appointment.
Sorry, I just remember.
Yeah. Okay. Footnote 33. Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 32 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Okay, so here is that one who's constantly hearing and chanting, then you can free yourself of all these things. So here we see is that's the whole point. Sadhana bhakti, the more it's stable, the more it's steady, then one will advance very nicely. So that's what you're looking for in sadhana,
is stableness.
So at any level, basically.
Yes. Yes. So sadhana means it's steady, just like we see even in Bhav sadhana, until absorption in the Lord is steady. You know, then you don't get to samadhi. You don't get to samadhi, you don't get purvaraga, you don't get purvaraga, you don't move into apandas, you don't move apandas, you don't get to directly serve the Lord, you don't directly serve the Lord, you don't develop prema. You don't develop prema, then, you know, what's the point?
No mahabhav for you.
Yes. Yes. No mahabhav for you. Yes. I'm sorry. Right? Okay, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Even for devotees who chant with offense, bhakti becomes perfect. It is said, nam aparadha yuktanam naman yeva harantyakam avishranti prayuktani tanyevarta karani cha. Even those who chant with offense destroy their sins. By continuous chanting, they attain prema. So you're chanting with offense, then still it will remove the sins,
yes.
Right? And so if we can, but the point is, but you have to continue chanting to get the prema. So that would be basically is that by chanting offensively, that will bring you to the point where you're stable in chanting. By being stable in chanting, that will bring you to prema.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're always trying to get to the point of nishta. Right? It's not just an arbitrary point. It's not like pin the tail on the donkey right here. It's just, you know, it's a matter of, it's an actual position that you're trying to get to, because that position is stable. So we're trying to, not that we're just chanted, but that we're always absorbed in hearing and chanting.
So when we call it sadhana, from Shraddha to before Nishtha, like the Martin of Ritya, are we being nice? Before we said that sadhana means steady.
No, it's sadhana, but it's not steady. So it's anishta bhakti.
Yeah.
So that means that's why there's difficulties.
Yeah.
See, it's that the sin and all that, that's not actually creating the big problem. You know, that we're thinking, oh, I'm not. It's that it creates a lack of interest to be steady. Yeah. That's the problem. So it's not the offenses, the different things, that's not actually the big deal. The big deal is because of that we're not steady.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, oh, the sin itself is the big problem. No, not being steady is the big problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So therefore we don't mind taking someone out of devotional activities and to purify them. Because if we actually understood purification means always being absorbed, we would put them into something that they're more. You know what I'm saying? Is that something? You know, so.
So it appears like instead of giving people medicine, you deprive them of medicine.
Yes, and that's the punishment, you know, like that. Because then you'll really be sick, and then that'll show you. Right? But what it doesn't make any sense, because then the problem is if you're not doing devotional service, not fully engaged, then you get distracted by Maya. Then you just go back into. So, how have we benefited the God? That's there, but then the problem comes down to, it ultimately comes down to no people, no problem. Yes. Yes, but then if it's only us, then that's a problem also, because then, so it'll only work actually for Mayavadis and Buddhists, because they don't mind that there is nobody. You know, but if there's any sense of karma at all, then it's, you know, what's the point of be the supreme controller and enjoyer unless someone else can appreciate it? Okay. They're submissive enough to
For the rest of our life. Just people like
work out a plan. Yes?
Yes?
No. Yes. In that state of bhakti, the jiva becomes purified. What to speak of the mind? Though bhakti purified the jiva from the contamination of ignorance, atonements cannot achieve this result. Right? So mm-hmm. if bhakti is purifying the jiva, which means the conscious, why won't the mind become purified? That's automatic. So we're thinking the person, he has bad character, bad qualities, how to correct that? By devotional service. That will purify the consciousness. That will automatically purify the mind. Though by vows and atonements performed by the karmis there is destruction of sinful reactions, the seed of sin, desire, is not destroyed. The mind becomes only a little purified at that time, only because there's a problem.
Yes.
And as soon as the vrata or the austerity is finished, then the mind goes back into the enjoying mode.
Yes.
Right? O king, it is true when you said atonement is like an elephant taking bath. The devotees destroy the root of sin by bhakti. They do not go to hell but attain the Lord. The karmis, however, under the control of sinful and pious results, go to hell and heaven again and again. This truth is indicated by this story.
Mm-hmm.
Sukadev Goswami continued, devotees who always lick the honey from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna do not care at all for material activities, which are performed under the three modes of material nature, and which bring only misery. Indeed, devotees never give up the lotus feet of Krishna to return to material activities. Others, however, who are addicted to Vedic rituals because they have neglected the service of the Lord's lotus feet and are enchanted by lusty desires, sometimes perform acts of atonement. Nevertheless, being incompletely purified, they return to sinful activities again and again. So they may feel something's wrong, so they may perform atonement, but then they'll go back to the sin again. Right? So it doesn't really purify, it doesn't correct. So in other words, the material life doesn't correct anything.
Yes.
Even a nice material life, it still doesn't correct anything. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the bee which licks the honey from the lotus feet of the Lord is not attached to the food of men or cows, grass, etc., even if it is dying of hunger. Similarly, the devotee does not enjoy material objects which he has rejected, though he enjoyed them in his previous condition, since he is situated in bhakti. Right? So being devotional, he's not interested in anything else. You know what I'm saying? It's not like the bees are hungry, they go chew on some grass or something. They just don't do that. Srila Prabhupada adds, a devotee's duty is to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. One may sometimes chant with offenses and sometimes without offenses, but if one seriously adopts this process, he will achieve perfection, which cannot be achieved through Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of atonement. Okay? Because that's the whole point. Retribution means that you're purifying yourself of all these different things. So the only real atonement is devotional service. So the point is sometimes it's with offenses, sometimes it's not. But if we keep at it, we try to be as steady as possible, it will come to that point where it will be stable, and then we'll see all this goes away. All the bad things goes away, and then we bring ourselves closer to praying. So. Sukadev Goswami continued, after hearing from the mouth of their master about the extraordinary glories of the Lord and his name, fame, and attributes, the Yamadutas were struck with wonder. Since then, as soon as they see a devotee, they fear him and dare not look at him again. Right? Because just in case the Vishnudutas show up, right? You look. No, no, I didn't. I saw you. No, 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 I didn't say that. Did I look? No, I didn't look. No, he didn't.
He's taking the time.
Devotee? What devotee? I didn't know there was a devotee here. So, like that.
But they didn't catch the point.
That's another thing, but at least they stay away from there and they don't get in trouble. Yamaraj doesn't get in trouble, so. Yeah, because that's what he said, they're pious. So unless they're interested, then only they'll be able to catch devotional service. When the great sage Agastya, the son of Kumbha, was residing in the Malaya hills and worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I approached him and he explained to me this confidential history. So this is something unique. So yeah. So he approached him when he was in the Malaya hills. 34 to 35. Okay. Important verses. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Navai vidhur rishayo napi deva. Nasidha mukya asura manusha. Kuto nu vidyadhara charanadhaya. Okay. Real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although fully situated in the mode of goodness, even the great rishis who occupy the topmost planets cannot ascertain the real religious principles, nor can the demigods or the leaders of Siddhaloka, to say nothing of the asuras, ordinary human beings, vididharas and charas. So religion is coming from Krishna, and only he and those who follow him or his devotees can understand it. No one else can actually understand it. So unless one has been graced by the Lord and the devotees, you can't actually understand devotional service. Right? So here we're studying, we're reading the words, but we'll actually only understand by Krishna's grace. Like that. It's not that I'm studying, therefore I know. No, it's I'm studying that sincere attempt, then pleasing the Lord, then we know. So that was spoken by Yamaraj. 6320. Swayambhur Naradha Sambhu Kumara Kapilo Manuhu Prahlado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vayasakir Vayam. Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narada, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Swayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janaka Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami, and I myself know the real religious principle spoken by Yamaraj.
For the Bhishma represents the Pandavas?
No, it means he's the Mahajan. They're the Lord's associates who take part in the pastimes and all that. So that's part of the roadshow.
Yeah.
You know, Bhishma is a Mahajan. So it's not that he's not part of that.
No.
Just like Yamaraj is also part of that whole scene.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So all these different aspects are represented, but here he's famous because he's a Mahajan.
Yeah.
The Pandavas are famous because they're the servants and associates of the Lord. Right?
In Bhagavatam, we have the explanation of these 12 mountains.
Yes.
Janaka?
Chanakya. I'm not sure.
Janaka.
Oh, Janaka. Yes, Janaka Rishi. Janaka Maharaj. He's one of the ones. He's the one that he's Sita Devi's father.
Yes.
Like that, because he's so many of the Upanishadic stories and other stories in the Vedas that are happening at a sacrifice are at a sacrifice of Janaka Maharaj. Because he was always doing yajnas, and so therefore there's always saintly persons there, and so there's always discussions. So many times the stories or discussions that come up, those are the things that are being discussed. So that's him. Right? Because otherwise, why is it happening? He understands the value. Because when you hear about his yajnas, you don't hear about how big and grand they are, though they would be, of course. You hear about the association of the discussions. Right? That was the one where it's established that, I think, Gotami is a Kayana Bhakta, on the Uttama platform. Right? Because it gives a definition of an example of Uttama, Madhyama, and a Kanishka. She's the example of the Uttama. But then I think the story that's given is about establishing who knows the scriptures the best.
Yeah.
You know, knows all the facts and figures, is memorized very nicely, knows all the rituals. So that turns out to be Vishwamitra. But when she asks about spiritual knowledge, he doesn't know anything. So then, you know, because he's becoming disturbed, you know, and the principle you don't disturb the mind's ignorant. Therefore, then he says, okay, then he's the most scholarly person. Because by the definition that they're using, he is the most scholarly. But real knowledge is knowing Paravidya, which he didn't know. So therefore, she's actually established as the superior. But only someone on that platform could do that. You know, does that make sense? So that's all in the court of Janaka. That's one of the stories. Yes.
sure it was Ashtavaka. When he came there, and you all laughed at him. You know that story?
No.
Because he was also giant in his court, and he said, and he started laughing at the response. And they all looked at him and he said, I thought that I came to the assembly of the saintly persons, but I came to the marketplace. Because only in the market people see the body. I think that's because.
Yeah, I don't know where it's from or what's it. Okay. Yeah, you also have to see where it's from, what's the reference, or which Purana it is. Because something like that, to me, sounds like it might be a Rajasic, because it's bringing that aspect out, because then somebody gets cursed. It's that the Rajasic Purana, somebody always gets cursed. You know, because otherwise, what's the point? What's the fun?
And why is Swayam Bhuva Manu there also? Because of the
sun. You'd rather have another Manu?
No, I do specifically.
Son of Lord Brahma? No, but specifically him. He's a Mata. You know, because he's always there, being the son of Brahma. He's cheering Jeev, so he'll be here for the full life of Brahma. Like that. Other Manus will be just... They'll be Manu for that particular length of time. Whether that's the end of their life or not, that's another thing. But they hold the post for that amount of time. He's special because he's the one who understands. That's why he can then document Manu Sanhita. That's why you see is he's not mentioned when it mentioned those attached to the rules of the Vedas. It mentioned Yajnavalkya and Jaimini. It didn't mention Manu. So Manu is documented so that you could be have the proper social system to engage in Krishna's service. So he understands it. But whether it's... Okay. Then 6.3.22. Etavan eve eva lokesmin humsam dharma parasmita bhakti yogo bhagavat tannama grahanadi bihi. Devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. So that's the it means if that's there, that's why you see Pancharatra works, why yajnas work, why meditation works, because there's chanting of the holy name. Right? There's no ritual that doesn't, in the deity worship or any of this, doesn't have some chanting going on.
So the other yugas are the other activities also going on, like deity worship and sexual yoga.
Means they'll always have those things, yeah. But the point is they're not the prominent. Yes, that's how you always tell. That could be a very happy moth. That would be like finding an ocean of sweet rice or something.
Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.31. Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnor Jagan Mangalam Amhasam Mahatam Apikauravya Vidhyai Kantika Niskritam.
My dear King, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is able to uproot even the reactions of the greatest sins. Therefore, the chanting of the Sankirtan movement is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Please try to understand this so that others will take it seriously. So that's the point. This is the whole point. This chant, this is the most important. We take it seriously, then it's good. Then others will take it seriously. Yeah. But that's the whole point. We take it seriously. We're the ones that are leading the chanting of the holy name, rather than the yoga studios.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Works well.
Yeah. I remember I was in... I think I mentioned this before, but I think it was in... Where was I? Bulgaria or Romania or someplace in the airport. Little dinky airport. International airport, but, you know, bigger than the one in Kabul. I have to say that. It's definitely bigger than that. But it wasn't very big. And, it's very small, and there's one big TV there, and it's making a lot of sound, right? So then sitting there for a long time, because you go on one of those airlines, there's definitely a lot of gap between flights, you know? So I'm not sure that I didn't see it quite a few times, this particular movie, because they seem to only play this one movie. But it was an interesting movie because it was a period movie. It was set back maybe... I kind of get the idea it was during World War II, when Europe was occupied by the Germans and like this. So you have this group of pilgrims, Christian pilgrims. They're walking somewhere to some place. I'm not sure what they were, if they were some kind of, you know, Orthodox or... I didn't get the idea that whether they were Orthodox or Catholics or like this. But they were some kind... They were walking... And they had hand symbols, and they were doing kirtan. Mm-hmm. You know, not Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but some variety of Christian kirtan. That's all they did. Morning to night, they'd walk, and they'd do kirtan the whole way. Right? So in other words, it wasn't an unknown thing to do this. Especially, even this was just last century. Right? So, the whole point is that, you know, we're thinking, oh, this is so weird. He says, no, it says even the Christians were doing it. You know, so that they don't. Then
it's one holy place, Christian holy place, and then every year in August there's a big festival, and many people cannot really walk by feet, like many days, and
right.
They sing all the way. They go and they sing.
Yeah, and they play kartals. Yeah. So it's that was what was happening. Yeah. So it was.
So we can do it.
Yeah. So the point is, they're out there in the street and they're like that. And also, just it also showed this other point: is no matter how crazy it is, the only actual good thing is the sankirtan. That's the only purification. Because the guy's going, and for some reason he gets separated from the group. Mm-hmm. They keep walking, and something happened. He went after something, and then that turns into something else, and he ends up, you know, driving somewhere else. And then there's this whole thing. He's trying to get somebody out of the hospital. The Nazis are controlling. It's a whole intrigue and going totally insane. And, you know, the party gets so insane you don't even know what's going to happen. The guy goes running off. I think that, you know, the soldiers are chasing him. And then he gets away. And then just as he's running down the path, he's gotten away and he runs. The same party is coming along. He comes running up the road and just merges back in and just keeps going. And that's how, it, you know, so it starts that way, it ends that way. You know, so that's the whole point.
Huh?
So he just the sankirtan move, that's the only way to deal with it. It's the only, you know. And you get distracted, it's still the only way to get back in. You know, they didn't say, hey, get out of here. You know, it's just, he just burned back in and kept going. You know, so it's not a bad one. You know, so you could have picked worse one to watch for over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, plus the worst thing is it's not in English.
No.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Okay. So if we take it seriously, then the others will take it seriously. So that's the whole point. Is he's mentioning to him as the king, he takes it seriously. Yeah. The subjects will take. So the leadership takes it seriously. Others will. Yamaraj took it seriously, then his Yamadutas then took it seriously. So that's the... So... Wow. Okay. Moving on. So... The descendants... Okay. Canto 6, Prescribed Duties for Mankind, Study Guard Part 2. The Sons of Daksha, Chapters 4 to 6. So Chapter 4, the Hamsa Guhya Prayers. Chapter 5, Narad Muni, Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Daksha is famous for cursing, right? Chapter 6, The Progeny of the Daughters of Daksha. Oh, okay. Preface. The birth of Daksha was described briefly at the end of the fourth canto. Now in the sixth canto, Daksha will be described in three chapters. Parikshit asks about the creation after hearing about the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu's daughters. Right, so he described the daughters and descendants of Manu. Mm-hmm. So now he'll describe the descendants of Daksha.
From Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's Introduction. Chapter 4. The Hamsa Guhya Prayers. Pratigya. Anything expressed by material vibrations, anything ascertained by material intelligence, and anything experienced by the material senses or concocted within the material mind is but an effect of the modes of material nature, and therefore has nothing to do with the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? It's his modes, so it's going to be acting according to his laws, but it has nothing to do with actually the real nature of the Supreme Lord, who is a person. So that's why we perform devotional service without the modes. That's the whole point. The pratigya of this chapter is taken from verse 29. Srila Prabhupada comments, or compliments, this statement in his purport to verse 30. Even this material world, which is conducted under the modes of material nature, is caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who therefore has an intimate relationship with the material world. If the material world were not a part of his body, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Cause, it would be incomplete. Footnote 1. Right? So that's the whole point, is to understand it's all Krishna, but it's different from Krishna. That's the important part. That's where we have difficulty, is because we think that it's, if it's Krishna, then everything's great, and if it's not Krishna, we deal with nothing. Right? So we either end up with karma, it's Krishna, so it's all great, so we can do anything, or jnana, that, you know, then nothing. So that's the difficult. That's why these things are dealt with so thoroughly, because otherwise the contamination of karma and jnana always comes up again and again. Right, from different angles. In other words, there's the vichar of the philosophy, and we have the vichar of our doubts and misgivings. You know, you bring it up, okay, that makes sense, but what about, you know, yeah, that, yeah. Yeah, okay, well, what, you know. Yeah. Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. Oh, no, we had the footnote. Footnote 1. The principle here to accommodate the statements and the pratigya is given in Bhagavad Gita 9.4.5. By me and my unamassed manifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, and yet, in me, but I am not in them. And yet, everything is that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. The pratigya of this chapter is also confirmed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.34. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Graham Grahyam Indriyahi Sevan Mukhi Mukhehi Jivadao Swayam Evas Puratyada. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for the transcendental love service unto him, as quoted in Bhagavad Gita 7.3 purport. So this chapter, then, we're going to try to understand how Krishna is in everything, but at the same time, he's not. So that means he can't be understood through anything material. But, you know, we're dealing with him. We can get an idea of him by his grace, by following the process he gives. By following that, then he'll reveal himself. So even though we're looking at him from universal form, he's the one who's revealed the universal form. Yeah. Right? And then, understanding that, trying to please Krishna, then we will understand him. Otherwise, we see as the great scholars, they may have some idea of universal form, but they don't know Krishna. Right? Because they're not following Shastra to understand Krishna. Is that? Yeah? Okay. Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. Question 6.9 is asked of Srila Sukadeva Goswami by Maharaj Prickett, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.1-2. The Blessed King said to Sukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, the demigods, demons, human beings, nagas, beasts, and birds were created during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. You have spoken about this creation briefly in the third canto. Now I wish to know about it elaborately. I also wish to know about the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by which he brought about the secondary creation."
right? So we've said how, okay, this happened. We just say, okay, you know, he glances, the jivas, time, and false ego. Then the pradhan separates into 24 elements, the 24 elements. Then with that, then the primary creation, all the different elements, I mean, all the different forms in that are created, all the different situations, all the things that, all points of influence, everything's made in the primary. Then, you know, the universes are expanded, the Lord enters them, then, Brahma comes from the lotus, then he, taking that primary blueprint, then he makes the secondary, and here we are.
Yes.
Right? Then Vidura asks about the same thing, but how is the Lord involved?
Yeah.
So his desire and how he's involved at each step.
Yeah.
Right? So then he glances, so that's that potency of that. Then the demigods can't put, the primary demigods can't put anything together. So he has to enter as the attractive potency, as Prajumna. Right? So that's why he goes into the universe. He's known as Prajumna. Because then it can be held together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that means you have all the elements, but the holding them together on that is Prajumna.
Yeah.
So in Sankarshan, it's the knowledge. Here's earth, here's water, fire. But in the universe, then you have Prajumna. So then they're all held together so you can get things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? And then because of the desire of the living entity, the Lord fulfilling that, then the lotus is created. And then Brahma then is created there. He's created from that lotus. The lotus is therefore the masculine feminine principle within the creation. And so he's born from that. Then does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So we've seen now just the generic, then how the Lord's involved. Now it's about how his energy is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it's the same thing, just taking the different perspectives. No, Garbhodakshay. Hirodakshay is Amiruddha. Yeah, because that's the goal. That's what you're trying to do. So that by following there is that, okay, I have the knowledge, I have the mechanics of things, right? So then I can do something, but I get the result. What that result's for, how I can get it, that's Amiruddha. So the reason I work is because I want a result. That's Anirudha or Super Soul. Yes, Paramatma. But that I can work and the mechanics do work, that's Prajumna. So that's the point, is the universal form is both of them, because you know, you have to be able to work, but you have to have a goal. Without a goal, you won't work. Unless you can work, how can you get a goal? So therefore, they're both the universal form. They're just different aspects of the same. And then the Lord's doing all this and creating, that's Vasudev. Right? So the pastimes of creation, the pastimes he has within the creation. Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
We're good? We're still good from the other day?
I think even better.
Okay, very good.
Going in the right direction.
Going in the right direction.
I'm sure something will come up.
You're still trying to figure out where Ronald McDonald's hits in, right?
I haven't, yeah. I always had a thing with him.
Yeah.
He's not supposed to be here.
No, he's supposed to be here.
Oh.
But he's part of, that means when Yamaraj mentioned about who you're supposed to collect,
yeah.
He's on the list.
He's right there.
He's on the short list.
Yes. VIP.
Yes.
Yeah. I think he had a mental breakdown.
Really?
The clown?
Yeah.
Because he was promoting meat eating for children.
Really?
And he spent the rest of his life, the original clown, he spent the rest of his life fighting the clown.
Okay. For a vegetarian?
Something, yeah.
Something, okay.
So,
okay.
Something happened. I don't know if he became a devotee.
Okay, well, that would be better.
It's still better, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay, this question is primarily answered in this chapter and continues through the sixth chapter. So in other words, we'll see creation all the way through to the sixth mm-hmm. chapter. So fourth through sixth. So this in this section, this whole. The rhetorical questions asked in the recitation of the Hamsaguya prayers do not fall under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Daksha, born from the Pachetas,
recited the Hamsaguya prayers in praise of the Lord in order to create progeny. Right, so we can see this is a later appearance, because we came down the descendants of Manu, so then you get the Prajetas, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of where we ended that whole discussion, yeah. right? Yeah. But then we see here is that now it's going to continue, because then he's born from them, yeah. Yeah. right? Yeah. You know, it's the same person. Just he needed to get a new body, because somehow or another the old one wasn't working as well. How you say? His wife wanted him to shape to how you say lose the goatee. Yeah. After Maharaj Parikit appealed to Sukadev Goswami to describe in further detail the creation of the living entities within this universe. Sukadev Goswami informed him that when the Prajetas, the 10 sons of Prachina Barhi, entered the sea to execute austerities, the planet Earth was neglected because of the absence of a king. Naturally, many weeds and unnecessary trees grew, and no food grains were produced. Indeed, all the land became like a forest. When the 10 Prajetas came out of the sea and saw the entire world full of trees, they were very angry with the trees and decided to destroy them all to rectify the situation. Thus the Prajetas created wind and fire to burn the trees to ashes. Soma, however, the king of the moon and the king of all vegetation, forbade the Prajetas to destroy the trees, since the trees are the source of fruit and flowers for all living beings. Just to satisfy the Prajetas, Soma gave them a beautiful girl born of Pramlocha, from Pramlocha Apsara. By the semen of all the Prajetas, Daksha was born of that girl. In the beginning, Daksha created all the demigods, demons, and human beings. But when he found the population not increasing properly, he took sannyas and went to Vindhya Mountain, where he underwent severe austerities and offered Lord Vishnu a particular prayer known as Hamsaguhya, by which Lord Vishnu became very pleased with him. The contents of the prayers were as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, Lord Hari, is the controller of both the living entities and the material nature. He is sufficient, self-sufficient, and self-effulgent. As the subject matter of perception is not the cause of our perceiving senses, so the living entity, although within the body, does not cause his eternal friend, the Supersoul, who is the cause of creation of all the senses. Yeah, so you can know the subject matter but still not be able to see anything, right? Because it's not an uncommon thing that someone is expert in that particular subject, but they themselves actually can't identify or use it. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So in the same way, the jiva is not the cause of the super soul. Yeah. Right? Does that make sense? Because of the living entity's ignorance, his senses are engaged with material objects. Since the living entity is alive, he can understand the creation of this material world to some extent, but he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the conception of the body, mind, and intelligence. Nevertheless, great sages who are always in meditation can see the personal form of the Lord within their hearts. Right? So these other great personalities can't, but the sages who are meditating on the Lord, they can. Since an ordinary living being is materially contaminated, his words and intelligence are also material. Therefore, he cannot ascertain the Supreme Personality of Godhead by manipulating his material senses. The conception of God derived through the material senses is inaccurate, because the Supreme Lord is beyond the material senses. But when one engages his senses in devotional service, the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed on the platform of the soul. So you can see, you can appreciate the Lord, how he's pervading everything in this. You can do that, but you can't understand him as a person. Right? That's not going to be. Even to understand the Brahman and Paramatma, he has to reveal himself, because it is him. Right? So that's why whatever you gain through the senses is always going to be limited. Right?
It's only what he reveals, that's what you'll know.
Mm-hmm. When that Supreme Godhead becomes the aim of one's life, one is said to have attained spiritual knowledge.
Right? That's knowledge. Mm-hmm. Anything else, you're still ignorant. The Supreme Brahman is the cause of all causes, because he originally existed before the creation. He is the original cause of everything, both material and spiritual, and his existence is independent. However, the Lord has a potency called avidya, the illusory energy, which induces the false arguer to think himself perfect, and which induces the illusory energy to bewilder the conditioned soul. That Supreme Brahman, the Supersoul, is very affectionate to his devotees. To bestow mercy upon them, he discloses his form, name, attributes, and qualities to be worshipped within this material world. Unfortunately, however, those who are materially absorbed worship various demigods. As the air passes over a lotus flower and carries the scent of the flower with it, or as the air sometimes carries dust and therefore assumes colors, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as the various demigods according to the desires of his various foolish worshippers. But actually, he is the Supreme Truth, right? Because you want something in particular. Therefore, you want that particular smell, but it's the air that's actually carrying it. So you want a particular benefit, so you turn to that demigod, but it's actually the Lord that's carrying it. You know, so the demigod is simply that dust in the air that gives it some color. Mm-hmm. But it's actually the Lord that's carrying it out. Mm-hmm. To fulfill the desires of his devotees, he appears in various incarnations, and therefore there is no need to worship the demigods. Right? So if you worship him, he's the one, the demigods are functioning because of him anyway. It's not like there's him and then there's the demigods. Mm-hmm. No, there's him. Right, as a person, then there's his manifestations, you know, as Brahman and Paramatma, in which through the external energy he'll manifest and make things happen.
Being very satisfied by the prayers of Daksha, Lord Vishnu appeared before Daksha with eight arms. The Lord was dressed in yellow garments and had a blackish complexion. Understanding that Daksha was very eager to follow the path of enjoyment, the Lord awarded him the potency to enjoy the illusory energy. The Lord offered him the daughter of Panchajana, named Asikni, who is suitable for Maharaj Daksha to enjoy in sex. Indeed, Daksha received his name because he was very expert in sex life. Right? Because Daksha means expert, but here it means expert in sex life. After awarding this benediction, Lord Vishnu disappeared. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 22. The Prajetas receive instructions and benedictions from Soma and beget a son named Daksha. 23 to 42. Prajapati Daksha recites the Hamsa Guhya prayers and receives darshan of the eight-armed form of Lord Vishnu. 43 to 54. The Lord rewards Prajapati Daksha for his austerities and disappears. So this is the picture where the Lord is coming on Garuda and he has all the eight arms and all this one. That was this one, or that one's for another one? Because it's one of the Bhagavatam covers. Mm-hmm. Used to have that picture. Mm-hmm. No? Yeah? It's a part of the sixth canto. Okay. Verses 1 to 22. The blessed king said to Sukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, the demigods, demons, human beings, nagas, beasts, and birds were created during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. You have spoken about this creation briefly in the third canto. Now I wish to know about it elaborately. I also wish to know about the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by which he brought about the secondary creation." Sudha Goswami said, O great sages assembled at Naimisharanya, after the great yogi Sukadeva Goswami heard King Pariksit's inquiry, he praised it and thus replied. Sukadeva Goswami said, "When the 10 sons of Prachinabarhi emerged from the waters in which they were performing austerities, they saw that the entire surface of the world was covered by trees." 4. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, In order to explain how creation was carried out by Daksha, first, the way in which Daksha took birth again, after he gave up the body with a goat's head that he received as an insult, is described. The sons of Prachinabarhi saw that the earth was covered with trees. When King Prachinabarhi had become detached and had gone to the forest, the earth was covered with trees because of lack of agriculture caused by the absence of the king. Srila Prabhupada first reminds us about the background of this story from the end of the fourth canto, and then expands on Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. When King Prachinabarhi was performing Vedic rituals in which the killing of animals was recommended, Narad Muni, out of compassion, advised him to stop. Prachinabarhi understood Narada properly and then left the king to perform austerities in the forest. His 10 sons, however, were performing austerities within the water, and therefore there was no king to see to the management of the world. When the 10 sons, the Prajetas, came out of the water, they saw that the earth was overrun with trees. When the government neglects agriculture, which is necessary for the production of food, the land becomes covered with unnecessary trees. Mm-hmm. Of course, many trees are useful because they produce fruits and flowers, but many other trees are unnecessary. They could be used as fuel and the land cleared and used for agriculture. When the government is negligent, less grain is produced, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:44. Krishi go rakshya vani jyam, vaishya karma Vaishya karma svabhava jam. The proper engagements for Vaishyas, according to their nature, are to farm and to protect cows. The duty of the government and the Kshatriyas is to see that the members of the third class, the Vaishyas, who are neither Brahmins nor Kshatriyas, are thus properly engaged. Kshatriyas are meant to protect human beings, whereas Vaishyas are meant to protect useful animals, especially cows. Right, so you see, they take care of the cows, the buffaloes, you know, the goats, the sheep. You know, also all useful. Mm-hmm. So that's what they, you know. Does that make sense? So Brahmins are to take care of Dharma. Kshatriyas, the people. Vaishyas, then the animals. Then everything's covered. Then the Shudras fit in wherever they, you know, have the nature to assist.
What does the Brahmins take care of?
Dharma. Yeah, because that means then everybody knows how to, you know, in other words, the law.
And Vaishnava Saddharma.
Yes, and Vaishnava Saddharma. The duty... Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, because of having undergone long austerities in the water, the Prajetas were very angry at the trees. Because like, when you're austere, you tend to get angry. So they've been doing for a long time, so they got angry. But it had basis, right? Desiring to burn them to ashes, they gathered generated wind and fire from their mouths. Srila Prabhupada comments, here the word tapo, dipita, manyava, indicates that a persons who have undergone severe austerities, tapasa, are endowed with great mystic power, as evinced by the Prajetas, who created fire and wind from their mouths. Although devotees undergo severe tapasya, however, they are vimanyava sadava, which means they are never angry. They are always decorated with good qualities. A sadhu, a devotee, is never angry. Actually, the real feature of devotees who undergo tapasya, austerity, is forgiveness. Although a Vaishnav has sufficient power in tapasya, he does not become angry when put into difficulty. One undergoes tapasya but does not become a Vaishnava. However, one does not develop good qualities. For example, Hiranyakashipu and Ravana also performed great austerities, but they did so to demonstrate their demoniac tendencies. Right? So that was their purpose. So they're not trying to develop qualities. But you serve Krishna, then these qualities are going to develop automatically. But your intent is to engage them in the Lord's service. Because that's the nicest way. In other words, you have the Vedic recommendations of activities and paraphernalia and situations, and you have the recommended mental state.
what are the moods, what qualities, what to engage. With all that, then you know. So then, and then they'll describe what is the goals that are worth gaining. The Vaishnava means is you do all that, but it's all meant, we're servant of Krishna, it's all meant as devotional service to please Krishna. So we don't identify with it. Doesn't mean we don't do it. Does that make sense? You know, it's not that you have to identify with your bathtub to take a bath. Yes. Oh, this doesn't have a thing. Okay, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.